Welcome to the Buy and Build podcast, the show where we explore the nuances of buying and building small businesses with the focus on the UK and Europe. We are your hosts. I'm Paul.
And I'm David. If you are interested in buying, building or investing in UK and European small businesses, this show will dissect the strategies and insights of business owners, investors and other deal professionals that we meet along our journeys to acquire and invest in profitable small businesses.
If you enjoy the show, please follow us on your favorite podcast app to stay up to date on all new episodes.
And join the Buy and Build community at buyandbuild.co, where we plan to share additional resources and ideas with this community. You can also find us on Twitter at Buy and Build Podcast. And now, on to this week's episode.
Okay, well, welcome back to another episode of the Buy and Build Podcast. I'm here with David as always, and it's just the two of us today. So we did one episode a few weeks back, and we wanted to get on to do another one because since then, David has actually closed on one of his acquisitions, and he's a month into his new role. There's also been some evolution on my side, so we can get into that too. But yeah, so maybe we can start with the update from you, because I think it's pretty interesting, David. You obviously closed your acquisition just before the end of last year. So maybe we can just recap what the business is, the service it provides, and maybe a reminder on any other deal structure, bits and pieces that you want to touch on, and then we can dive into your first couple months.
Yeah, sure. So last time we did an update, I was looking at a couple of deals. The first was a content provider for care homes. So it's a business called The Daily Sparkle, which has a reminiscence newspaper that they provide to care homes across the UK, alongside a magazine and various activities. So reminiscence therapy has been shown to be really effective for elderly people, and in particular those with dementia, which interestingly, 75% of UK care home residents have dementia. So it's a very targeted product. The business has been going for well over 10 years, offers amazing service to those care homes that subscribe. My granddad suffered with dementia, so I had a personal connection to the product and had used it with him myself in the past and seen, you know, the sort of conversations that it can open up and, you know, the kind of memories that it can evoke and, you know, how that can help strengthen relationships with relatives. And, you know, same goes within care homes between care staff and residents or amongst residents. So really great product, something that myself and my wife, whose grandmother also suffers from dementia, very passionate about and were keen to get behind. So yeah, we completed on that deal at the end of December. And I think we'll go into that in a little bit more. The other deal that I was looking at the time was a raw pet food business, which again, I was very interested in. I went to visit the business at the end of the summer, I think it was, or early autumn, based up in Worcestershire. I think my realization from going to see that business was it was just that little bit too small, both in terms of the scale of the business and the size of the team. It was really still too owner dependent, hadn't really built out much of a support team or the processes that would, you know, enable that business to not run itself, but, you know, have some degree of autonomy from me, which was something that I was looking for. Daily Sparkle has a team in place, has a general manager, Melanie, who's really great and has been with the business a few years and been in that role for a couple of those. So it's something that I felt comfortable with taking on and, you know, alongside owning the business and hopefully giving it some direction, really playing more of a kind of sales and marketing consultant approach. So I am consulting. I'm running my own sales and marketing consultancy and advising clients. And you know, I'm hoping to also bring that skill set and that experience to this business and help build out the sales and marketing processes to help it grow into the future that it's lacked to date. You know, the sales and marketing historically has been a little bit more ad hoc. So really looking to kind of strengthen that side of the business because the core product is really strong. You know, it's been going for a long time. We've got a great team of writers and proofreaders and a really great editor in the business who looks after the core content product. That's all in a good place. And the customers really love it. We get fantastic feedback. I've been speaking to a lot of customers over the last couple of weeks and, you know, really strong reviews. We've been started doing an NPS survey, which I know has its critics as well as its advocates, but, you know, just as an approach to understanding customer attitudes to the products and customer advocacy, and it's really strong. You know, it's coming back at 86, which I was really happy to see, and, you know, getting lots of insights there as to what people love about the product. So yeah, really early days, just trying to get my kind of feet under the desk, get to know the team, and then start figuring out ways to help strengthen the business going forward.
Yeah, really exciting. And I think, like I touched on the previous time we talked about this, a really good fit to your skill set, I think. A lot of the times as acquisition entrepreneurs, you may target an industry that you really know a little about, or your skill set, you know, maybe isn't too specifically geared towards the target. But I think in this case, it really is. And just to speak a little bit about the business model, this is subscription-based, right? Clients are subscribing to this service to receive this publication on an ongoing basis. So it's got that recurring revenue component.
Exactly. 95% of the revenue is from the Daily Sparkle, which is a subscription. So as part of that subscription, the predominantly care homes, again, about 90% of our customers are care homes. They get the Daily Sparkle publication alongside weekly publication and a monthly magazine. We have an app with loads of really great interactive content, music, quizzes, activities, etc.
Okay, so exciting opportunity, matches the skill set. But as with all small deals, it doesn't come without a little hiccups and speed bumps along the way. So we've obviously caught up offline, and the first couple of months has been a few things that came out. Do you want to talk about some of the first few weeks and some of the things you had to tackle? I mean, I guess you touched on some of the good things in terms of the NPS scores and, you know, a lot of things to like it, but obviously a few speed bumps out the gates. Do you mind talking a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So closed the deal on 15th of December, went to visit the team. Business is based in Devon, really lovely part of the country. Went to visit the team on the 20th, really just to introduce myself. That day we had a fairly significant cancellation to the tune of about 2% of the business's revenue. It's a subscription business. You'll get cancellations. Kind of took that in my stride pre-Christmas. The business was on holiday over the Christmas and New Year period, kind of take 2 weeks off. So in that sense, perhaps not an ideal time to complete the acquisition, but gave me a little bit more time to kind of look through some of the materials and some of the systems and get up to speed kind of on my own time over that break. Then the first week back in January, we had a series of cancellations from other kind of larger customers. I mean, you know, one of the things I liked about the business from a kind of commercial perspective was the fact that it wasn't overly reliant on any one single customer. So the biggest customer was worth a little under 5% of the business's revenue. So there was not a significant vulnerability to any one customer, but we had a few cancellations then, a few subsequent cancellations in the new year, which took the revenue loss to close to 10%. And that was a bit of a shock to everyone, to be honest. I don't think any of the existing team saw it coming. I don't think the sellers saw it coming. I think in part it's a little bit of bad timing with it being the new year, actually, and you know, perhaps new budgets coming through and things moving around in the budget. So, you know, that's perhaps a lesson for other people to think about, you know, deal timing and perhaps the new year's significant. So yeah, so that was, you know, that was a bit of a gut shot. I think, you know, Paul and I, you know, we were talking separately, and you know, I think one of the most important, if not the most important, characteristics of an entrepreneur is resilience. And you know, I think being fresh to the business ownership game, that's a relatively undeveloped muscle. And, you know, being new to the deal, that was quite a shock. So yeah, it did take some adjustment. You know, we were wondering, you know, what's going on here? You know, why have we had these cancellations? You know, again, like losing 10 and, you know, maybe it would increase to 15% of revenue in short order is far from catastrophic for the business. I mean, it's annoying for many reasons. It's not what I had hoped for, but it's fine. I think like the more concerning thing was, is this the start of a trend? You know, is there something going on here? Is this a kind of negative trajectory? And that's kind of what we had to get our heads around. And I personally had to kind of get comfortable with in the first month.
Yeah, I can only imagine how scary it must be. I think you touched on the fact that you started reviewing the product. And just to give people a sense of timeline, I imagine that was after a lot of these cancellations happened. So probably right after the fact, you started thinking like, is this product, do people actually like this product? Have I bought a real product here? Even though it has a recurring revenue, you still have to have a product that people want. And then you step back and did the review, and then you kind of got that reassurance that it's people like the product, but you know, sometimes budgets are going to dictate that this gets cut.
Yeah, I think that's right. I guess pre-close, I'd looked a lot at the numbers around the product and the historical churn, and kind of really thought, well, the proof's in the pudding with a product like this. If people are buying it and keep on buying it, they like it, they value it. The business had stayed pretty stable for the previous few years in terms of top line, which from my perspective was quite impressive given the environment. You know, care homes were rocked. They actually lost some really quite significant customers due to budget cuts during the COVID period, but had managed still to keep the overall revenue of the business fairly stable. So, you know, I was kind of comforted a lot by that. I didn't do as much as I could have, or perhaps should have, in terms of, you know, the qual side and kind of talking to customers about the product. I mean, it's kind of difficult really to get to the right people, you know, within the care homes, you know, users of the product. I'm sure I could have, but it would have been quite a small sample, and I'm not sure how, you know, representative it would have been. So yeah, in hindsight, could have perhaps done, you know, more on that front to kind of diligence the strength of the product. But yeah, I think, you know, having spoken to more people, spoken to customers, spoken to people in the industry, like the product is really well regarded. It's known as, you know, a very high quality and actually quite unique product. The broader space that it sits within for care homes is activities. And, you know, that is a busier space. It's a more crowded space. And I think, you know, we potentially could come under a little bit more pricing pressure as a result of that, because there are kind of very cheap activities alternatives, but they don't really solve the specific need or to such a high standard as the Daily Sparkles does. So yeah, it's been a learning, you know, going to keep learning. I mean, I hope to afford myself the privilege of spending the first few months really just learning, you know, learning about the product, learning about the business, learning about the team. I think, you know, I'm having to kind of jump in and pull a few more levers a bit quicker than I would have probably otherwise. But, you know, there'll be benefits of that long term as well.
Absolutely. And thinking back at the due diligence process, so you had mentioned kind of maybe timing could have been better, could have done a little bit more review of the customers, but maybe that wouldn't have actually given you the outcome that you were looking at. The sample would have been too small. But are there any other things you look back on thinking, oh, I could have maybe dug a bit deeper here, or maybe I didn't really need to do that, that was a waste of time? Anything that kind of springs to mind?
I could have pushed a little bit more on the customer point and spoken to a few more of the big customers. I think the seller was reluctant to have me speak to them one-to-one because I had asked to speak to some of the larger customers. Now, my current thinking of what has happened here is, and this is, I think, a learning for me and a learning for people more broadly, you know, when a seller's looking to exit a business, I think a lot of their attention, a lot of the seller's attention had been focused on the sale for the prior year. So I think some of the conversations, you know, some of the customer kind of proximity that would have been helpful for avoiding, you know, these kind of cancellations wasn't there. I'm not sure if it would have been necessarily if they weren't selling the business, but I think it was, you know, very much a case of, look, let's not kind of, you know, poke the sleeping lion. Let's kind of leave these things be. So, you know, they didn't talk to the customers kind of as much as I would want to and expect to going forward. And I don't think they, well, I know they wouldn't have been comfortable with a buyer doing so. Like that's genuine on their part. It's not them trying to be kind of evasive or sneaky, but it, you know, it could have been more of a red flag for me. And yeah, I could have pushed for like a customer survey or something similar to kind of get the sort of feedback that I was looking for in a less invasive manner. So yeah, so that would be my 2020 hindsight view now.
Are you able to kind of pull up online reviews for a company like this? Is it kind of, is there stuff on like Trustpilot and stuff like that for a business like this?
100%. Yeah. So that is something that, yeah, they do have a Trustpilot. It's like 4.8 out of 5, hundreds of reviews. And I'd analyze the Trustpilot reviews as part of my diligence to understand, you know, what it is that customers like about the product and how they use it. So I had done that. And again, you know, it was all very positive for many of the reasons that I'm kind of understanding, talking to customers myself subsequently. So that gave a fair insight.
A few interesting lessons there, and thanks for sharing that, because I know it could not have been easy right out the gate to have kind of a bit of a snowball effect there. And like you said, thankfully, there's not huge concentration. So by no means is this going to impact the long-term, you know, the long-term profitability of the business. But I'm sure it can be extremely daunting when it's happening and you're in the thick of it. Extremely interesting. And thanks for those insights, David. I think a lot of people will take the nuggets that you've shared with us, and hopefully, you know, they will learn from, I don't want to say the mistakes that we made, but the potential risks that lie in these small business deals, and hopefully they can navigate it. There's always going to be certain risks, and part of the reason why we're sharing our stories is that hopefully it helps people. And so maybe then I can give an update on kind of where things are with me. So just quickly, I think last time where I was in due diligence on a fine security deal. Really good company. You know, there was an existing manager in place similar to the deal that you've closed on, which, you know, made things, you know, just feel a little bit more comfortable having to step in as the owner on day one. There's a lot of things that are good about the industry, you know, B2B services, a lot of recurring revenue. And the one thing, like the one at the time, it wasn't really a red flag. They did have a chunky top customer. It was around 17-18% over the last couple of years. And the customer was also in an industry. It was a retailer that, I don't want to give too much information, but basically a retailer in a sector that, you know, just basically would do much better if it was a completely online business. So I'd factored into the valuation thinking it would be a slow drip, that this customer will slowly become a smaller percentage of revenue, but regardless, I was planning to kind of diversify the customer base to kind of get rid of that concentration as quickly as I could. So that's where it was at. And it was pretty, I can't remember exactly what it was, but I mean, it was pretty close to the finish line, to be honest. And it must have been a couple of weeks before we were actually about to close, like the SPA and things were in their real final drafts. And I had a meeting with the bank that were getting ready to facilitate the loan. And they went back and they'd already done credit check on the top 5 customers, and the due diligence had kind of dragged on for a little bit longer than usual because there was some back and forth on a few things, mainly around this concentration issue. And when they did, they came back and they told me that the main customer had their credit insurance pulled. And admittedly, I knew that sounded bad, but I don't know how bad that was. So I kind of, you know, spoke to them, wrapped my head around what that meant, and everyone that I was speaking to had basically implied it's a leading indicator that the company is probably going to go bankrupt unless, you know, they can be saved some way or the other. So that obviously didn't sit well with me. So we tried, and to be honest, the owner was not really aware of this. He was a really outstanding guy, upfront, honest, like a really good guy. And I guess he was appreciative that I had told him, but obviously I wanted to restructure it accordingly, if possible. From his perspective, they were invoicing more than ever, paying their bills as quick as ever. So he didn't really see the risk, you know, just from his experience dealing with them. He tried to call them. They assured him there were no problems, I guess, as they would. But effectively, we couldn't really agree on a suitable structure, one where I thought that my risk was hedged if this customer should go bankrupt, you know, very shortly after I take over. And yeah, so we tried, we went back and forth a little bit, but we just couldn't really agree on something that made sense for me, I guess, and for him. So unfortunately, I pulled out of that deal, which was costly as well as heartbreaking, to be honest. But you know, it's part of the process, I guess. I mean, obviously, I prefer to have found it out before rather than later. So that's one thing. I mean, who knows? You know, I've tried to check in on the company, and it seems like things are still going well for the company. And it would have been now, I guess, 3-4 months behind the ownership seat, but still was not worth the risk. And yeah, it goes like that. So obviously had a few other deals in the pipeline, but that was the most promising one. Key lesson there would probably just be around the concentration issue. I think, you know, to your point, you really had, you know, a handful of customers that left, but still only 15% or 10 to 15%. I'm not sure if I'm mixing that up, but this was one customer that would have been more than that. And this business, I think, probably had a higher fixed cost base. I mean, I could be wrong, relatively speaking. So just from like an operational leverage perspective, losing that one customer and not being able to adjust fixed costs accordingly, you know, as quickly as you would lose it, would result in a lot of pressure in terms of profitability. So yeah, I think just, you know, don't ever think that you can hedge customer concentration risk like quickly as you take over. It's probably going to take time. And if you can structure deals from the outset to kind of hedge some of that risk, try to do so in some way. I think if I had have done that in the beginning, it probably would have made the late conversations a little bit easier when this information came out. But the fact that it was kind of just a standard deferred payment over 3 years, no interest attached, fortunately for me, but not really contingent on much, fortunately for the owner. Then when it came down to kind of more stringent deal structure, it was just never going to happen, I think. So those are a few things I think I took out of that deal. So yeah, a little bit frustrating to be quite honest and yeah, expensive. But anyway, so now I have made some progress on another deal, which is interesting. I don't know if I ever spoke about my interest in the home improvement sector, kind of the window and door installation companies. There's a lot to like about the sector. Really is a lot. I think the one thing that is less compelling compared to the previous business is the fact that there's not much recurring revenue. A lot of times it's actually just one-off sales. So it's similar in some regards to some HVAC companies and things like that, that don't do a lot of the maintenance, but just do kind of small installation projects around homes. So I would say don't confuse it with the construction company. I mean, they don't really have any CapEx. Inventory is just work in progress that passes through the warehouse. And cash flow is pretty good, in fact, because customers are mostly homeowners. But yeah, so this deal is much bigger in size. It's doing around 700,000 in EBITDA. And the valuation that the owners are looking for is actually pretty fair, to be honest. It's probably just a touch over 3, depending on exactly where that EBITDA number comes out. And
3x, yeah, Paul.
3x, sorry, yeah. So that would put it around just over 2 million total EV. And yeah, so it looks really good. I think I went and met with the owners. There's 3 owners that kind of wear different hats in the business, and they seem like really good guys. The key risk there is they're all looking to exit, but they've agreed to at least a 12-month handover period. And they seem pretty sincere about the fact that their employees are important to them, and they want to make sure that the transition goes smoothly should things progress that way. So that was pretty good to hear, and good to hear that they're willing to continue on for 12 months. And yeah, the business itself seems very professionally run. I had a look around and met the people, kind of walked around. I didn't meet everyone, obviously, because they are keeping it somewhat confidential, but I met most of the senior staff, kind of went to lunch with them, did all of that stuff. And yeah, just seemed like really good people. So we'll see how that progresses. I'm at the stage now where I'm talking to some lenders, also considering taking on potential investors that could add value. I think I could potentially do it by myself, but I think given it's a slightly bigger company and maybe specific skills would be helpful, I think I would like to take on some outside investment. But yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at. And that's the update. So I would like to share more with you on that deal, but I just can't right now. But happy that things are progressing, because it was a little bit of a frustrating point at the end of last year, kind of the last quarter of last year. But try to keep the pipeline rich as well as you can in due diligence. And it took a while to get things back up, but I'm glad there's another promising deal that's looking like things are progressing positively at least.
Yeah, I think it's a really exciting one. Seems like a good fit. Yeah, from what you said, it feels like well positioned for someone like yourself coming in and taking the reins. And that 12-month handover would be invaluable.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and two of the three directors, they're in their 50s. They've said that potentially they'd be looking, they'd be comfortable staying on even longer than that. I guess it just depends on who is the ultimate, like if it's me that ends up acquiring, how do they get along with that person? That'll dictate a lot of how long they decide to stay on. Also, you never know, after they get some of the upfront payment, maybe they just lose a little bit of interest, which would be understandable, frankly. So you don't know how that's going to play out, but the fact that they've agreed to that does give me some reassurance. And also the sales director, which is one of the three, he's already basically hired his replacement, who he speaks very highly of. And I briefly met him. He seems like a good, friendly guy and seems like an ambitious guy. So that's also positive. But yeah, it's still a long way to go, but at least a good deal, promising deal. The people who, I guess the intermediaries, that it isn't a broker, it's actually a corporate finance house. They're really switched on guys, and they're not trying to pull anything over your eyes. They're very familiar with what decent multiples are. They can articulate kind of, when I submitted my offer, it's cash free, debt free. The owners didn't really know what that meant, but they can clearly explain that. They're just pretty sophisticated M&A professionals that are helping the deal progress quite nicely, rather than a broker in the sense that, it's just someone that's there in between. They're actually quite a bit of value, albeit they're working for the seller for sure, but they're actually adding a ton of value. So that's quite nice actually, to be honest. So yeah, all positive. Let's see how it progresses.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Buy and Build podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, please follow the show on your favorite podcast app to stay up to date on all new episodes. If you'd like to support the show, please share it with others you think might be interested.
You can also join the Buy and Build community at buyandbuild.co, where we plan to share additional resources and ideas with this community. You can also find us on Twitter at Buy and Build Podcast.